Chapter 7. In this advocate station, we see it plainly by reflection, that the dissenters, like a parcel of knaves, have retained all the high churchmen in their pay. They are certainly all in their pension roll. Indeed, I could not see the money paid them there, it was too remote, but I could plainly see the thing. All the deep lines of the project are laid as true. They are so tacked and consolidated together that if anyone will give themselves leave to consider, they will be most effectually convinced that the High Church and the dissenters here are all in a cabal, a mere knot, a piece of clockwork. The dissenters are the dial plate, and the High Church the movement, the wheel within the wheels, the spring and the screw, to bring all things to motion, and make the hand on the dial plate point which way the dissenters please. For what else have been all the shams they have put upon the governments, kings, states, and people they have been concerned with? What schemes have they laid on purpose to be broken? What vast contrivances, on purpose to be ridiculed and exposed? The men are not fools, they had never 5d to consolidate AB, but that they were willing to save the dissenters, and put it into a posture in which they were sure it would miscarry. I defy all the wise men of the moon to show another good reason for it. Methinks I begin to pity my brethren, the moderate men of the church, that they cannot see into this new plot, and to wish they would, but get up into our consolidator, and take a journey to the moon, and there, by the help of these glasses, they would see the allegorical, symbolical, heterodoxicality of all this matter. It would make immediate converts of them. They would see plainly that to tack and consolidate, to make exclusive laws, to persecute for conscience, disturb, and distress parties, these are all fanatic plots, mere combinations against the church, to bring her into contempt, and to fix, and establish the dissenters to the end of the chapter. But of this, I shall find occasion to speak occasionally, when an occasion presents itself, to examine a certain occasional bill, transacting in these lunar regions, some time before I had the happiness to arrive there. In examining the multitude and variety of these most admirable glasses for the assisting the optics, or indeed the formation of a new perceptive faculty, it was, you may be sure, most surprising to find there that art had exceeded nature, and the power of vision was assisted to that prodigious degree as even to distinguish non-entity itself. And in these strange engines of light it could not but be very pleasing to distinguish plainly betwixt being and matter, and to come to a determination in the so long canvassed dispute of substance, vel materialis, vel spiritualis. And I can solidly affirm that in all our contention between entity and non-entity, there is so little worth meddling with, that if we had these glasses some ages ago, we should have left troubling our heads with it. I take upon me, therefore, to assure my reader that whoever pleases to take a journey, or voyage, or flight up to these lunar regions, as soon as ever he comes ashore there, will presently be convinced of the reasonableness of immaterial substance, and the immortality, as well as immateriality of the soul. He will no sooner look into these explicating glasses, but he will be able to know the separate meaning of body, soul, spirit, life, motion, death, and a thousand things that wise men puzzle themselves about here, because they are not fools enough to understand. Here too I find glasses for the second sight, as our old women call it. This second sight has been often pretended to in our regions, and some famous old wives have told us they can see death, the soul, futurity, and the neighborhood of them, in the countenance. By this wonderful art, these good people unfold strange mysteries, as under some irrecoverable disease, to foretell death, under hypochondriac melancholy, to presage trouble of mind, in pining youth, to predict contagious love, and 100 other infallibilities, which never fail to be true, as soon as ever they come to pass, and are all grounded upon the same infallibility, by which a shepherd may always know when any one of his sheep is rotten, viz., when he shakes himself to pieces. But all this guess and uncertainty is a trifle to the vast discoveries of these explicatory optic glasses, for here are seen the nature and consequences of secret mysteries. Here are read strange mysteries relating to predestination, eternal decrees, and the like. Here 'tis plainly proved that predestination is, in spite of all enthusiastic pretenses, so entirely committed into man's power, that whoever pleases to hang himself today won't live till tomorrow. No, though 40 predestination prophets were to tell him, his time was not yet come. Their abstruse points are commonly and solemnly discussed here, and these people are such heretics that they say God's decrees are all subservient to the means of his providence, that what we call providence is a subjecting all things to the great chain of causes and consequences, by which that one grand decree, that all effects shall obey, without reserve to their proper moving causes, supersedes all subsequent doctrines, or pretended decrees, or predestination in the world. That by this rule, he that will kill himself, God, nature, providence, or decree, will not be concerned to hinder him, but he shall die. Any decrees, predestination, or foreknowledge of infinite power, to the contrary in any wise, notwithstanding that it is in a man's power, to throw himself into the water, and be drowned, and to kill another man, and he shall die, and to say, God appointed it, is to make him the author of murder, and to injure the murderer in putting him to death for what he could not help doing. All these things are received truths here, and no doubt would be so everywhere else, if the eyes of reason were open to the testimony of nature, or if they had the helps of these most incomparable glasses. Some pretended, by the help of these second sight glasses, to see the common periods of life, and others said, they could see a great way beyond the leap in the dark. I confess, all I could see of the first was, that holding up the glass against the sea, I plainly saw, as it were on the edge of the horizon, these words, the verge of life and death is here. 'Tis best to know where 'tis, but not how far. As to seeing beyond death, all the glasses I looked into for that purpose, made but little of it, and these were the only tubes that I found defective. For here I could discern nothing but clouds, mists, and thick dark hazy weather, but revolving in my mind that I had read a certain book in our own country, called Nature, it presently occurred that the conclusion of it, to all such as gave themselves the trouble of making out those foolish things called inferences, was always look up, upon which, turning one of their glasses up, and directing the point of it towards the zenith, I saw these words in the air, Revelation, in large capital letters. I had like to have raised the mob upon me for looking upright with this glass. For this, they said, was prying into the mysteries of the great eye of the world, that we ought to inquire no farther than he has informed us, and to believe what he had left us more obscure. Upon this, I laid down the glasses, and concluded that we had Moses and the prophets, and should be never the likelier to be taught by one come from the moon. In short, I found, indeed, they had a great deal more knowledge of things than we in this world, and that nature, science, and reason had obtained great improvements in the lunar world. But as to religion, it was the same equally resigned to, and concluded in faith and redemption. So I shall give the world no great information of these things. I come next to some other strange acquirements obtained by the helps of these glasses, and particularly for the discerning the imperceptibles of nature, such as the soul, thought, honesty, religion, virginity, and 100 other nice things, too small for humane discerning. The discoveries made by these glasses, as to the soul, are of a very diverting variety, some hieroglyphical, and emblematical, and some demonstrative. The hieroglyphical discoveries of the soul make it appear in the image of its maker, and the analogy is remarkable, even in the very simile. For as they represent the original of nature as one great eye, illuminating as well as discerning all things, so the soul, in its allegorical or hieroglyphical resemblance, appears as a great eye, embracing the man, enveloping, operating, and informing every part, from whence those sort of people who we falsely call politicians, acting so much to put out this great eye, by acting against their common understandings, are very aptly represented by a great eye, with six or seven pair of spectacles on. Not but that the eye of their souls may be clear enough of itself, as to the common understanding, but that they happen to have occasion to look sometimes, so many ways at once, and to judge, conclude, and understand so many contrary ways upon one and the same thing, that they are fain to put double glasses upon their understanding, as we look at the solar eclipses, to represent them in different lights, lest their judgments should not be wheedled into a compliance with the hellish resolutions of their wills, and this is what I call the emblematic representation of the soul. As for the demonstrations of the soul's existence, 'tis a plain case, by these explicative glasses, that it is. Some have pretended to give us the parts, and we have heard of chirurgeons that could read an anatomical lecture on the parts of the soul, and these pretended to be a creature in form, whether chameleon or salamander, authors have not determined. Nor is it completely discovered when it comes into the body, or how it goes out, or where its locality or habitation is, while 'tis a resident. But they very aptly show it, like a prince, in his seat, in the middle of his palace, the brain, issuing out his incessant orders to innumerable troops of nerves, sinews, muscles, tendons, veins, arteries, fibers, capillaries, and useful officers, call it organici, who faithfully execute all the parts of sensation, locomotion, concoction, and see, and in the 100,000th part of a moment, return with particular messages for information, and demand new instructions. If any part of his kingdom, the body, suffers a depredation, or an invasion of the enemy, the expresses fly to the seat of the soul, the brain, and immediately are ordered back to smart, that the body may of course send more messengers to complain. Immediately other expresses are dispatched to the tongue, with orders to cry out, that the neighbors may come in and help, or friends send for the chirurgeon. Upon the application, and a cure, all is quiet, and the same expresses are dispatched to the tongue to be hush, and say no more of it till farther orders. All this is as plain to be seen in these engines, as the moon of our world from the world in the moon. As the being, nature, and situation of humane soul is thus spherically and mathematically discovered, I could not find any second thoughts about it in all their books, whether of their own composition or by translation. For it was a general received notion that there could not be a greater absurdity in humane knowledge than to employ the thoughts in questioning what is as plainly known by its consequences as if seen with the eye, and that to doubt the being or extent of the soul's operation is to employ her against herself. And therefore, when I began to argue with my old philosopher against the materiality and immortality of this mystery we call soul, he lauded me, and told me he found we had none of their glasses in our world, and bid me send all our sceptics, soul sleepers, our cowards, bakers, kings, and bakewells, up to him into the moon, if they wanted demonstrations, where, by the help of their engines, they would make it plain to them, that the great eye being one vast intellect, infinite, and eternal, all inferior life is a degree of himself, and as exactly represents him as one little flame the whole mass of fire, that it is therefore incapable of dissolution, being like its original in duration, as well as in its powers and faculties, but that it goes and returns by emission, regression, as the great I governs and determines. And this was plainly made out by the figure I had seen it in, viz. An eye, the exact image of its maker. 'Tis true, it was darkened by ignorance, folly, and crime, and therefore obligate to wear spectacles. But though these were defects or interruptions in its operation, they were none in its nature, which as it had its immediate efflux from the great eye, and its return to him must partake of himself, and could not, but be of a quality uncommatable, by casualty or death. From this discourse we the more willingly adjourned our present thoughts, I being clearly convinced of the matter, and as for our learned doctors, with their second and third thoughts, I told him I would recommend them to the man in the moon for their farther illumination, which if they refused to accept, it was but just they should remain in a wood, where they are, and are like to be, puzzling themselves about demonstrations, squaring of circles, and converting oblique into right angles, to bring out a mathematical clockwork soul, that will go till the weight is down, and then stand still till they know, not who must wind it up again. However, I cannot pass over a very strange and extraordinary piece of art which this old gentleman informed me of, and that was an engine to screw a man into himself. Perhaps our countrymen may be at some difficulty to comprehend these things by my dull description, and to such I cannot but recommend a journey in my engine to the moon. This machine that I am speaking of contains a multitude of strange springs and screws, and a man that puts himself into it is very insensibly carried into vast speculations, reflections, and regular debates with himself. They have a very hard name for it in those parts, but if I were to give it an English name, it should be called the cogitator, or the chair of reflection. And first, the person that is seated here feels some pain in passing some negative springs that are wound up effectually to shut out all injecting disturbing thoughts, and the better to prepare him for the operation that is to follow, and this is without doubt a very rational way, for when a man can absolutely shut out all manner of thinking but what he is upon, he shall think the more intensely upon the one object before him. This operation passed, here are certain screws that draw direct lines from every angle of the engine to the brain of the man, and at the same time, other direct lines to his eyes, at the other end of which lines, there are glasses which convey or reflect the objects the person is desirous to think upon. Then the main wheels are turned, which wind up according to their several offices, this the memory, that the understanding, a third the will, a fourth the thinking faculty, and these being put all into regular motions, pointed by direct lines to their proper objects, and perfectly uninterrupted by the intervention of whimsy, chimera, and a thousand fluttering daemons that gender in the fancy, but are effectually locked out as before, assist one another to receive right notions, and form just ideas of the things they are directed to, and from thence the man is empowered to make right conclusions, to think and act like himself, suitable to the sublime qualities his soul was originally blessed with. There never was a man went into one of these thinking engines, but he came wiser out than he was before, and I am persuaded, it would be a more effectual cure to our deism, atheism, skepticism, and all other schisms, than ever the Italian's engine, for curing the gout, by cutting off the toe. This is a most wonderful engine, and performs admirably, and my author gave me extraordinary accounts of the good effects of it, and I cannot but tell my reader that our sublunar world suffers millions of inconveniences for want of this thinking engine. I have had a great many projects in my head how to bring our people to regular thinking, but 'tis in vain without this engine, and how to get the model of it I know not. How to screw up the will, the understanding, and the rest of the powers, How to bring the I, the thought, the fancy, and the memory into mathematical order and obedient to mechanic operation. Help Boyle, Norris, Newton, Manton, Hammond, Tillotson, and all the learned race. Help philosophy, divinity, physics, economics, all's in vain. A mechanic chair of reflection is the only remedy that ever I found in my life for this work. As to the effects of mathematical thinking, what volumes might be rid of it will more easily appear if we consider the wondrous usefulness of this engine in all humane affairs, as of war, peace, justice, injuries, passion, love, marriage, trade, policy, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.